Hi, everybody. My name's Johnny, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Johnny.
I'm going to talk to you about the 12 traditions. We've had people for the last hour and a half going over the tradition to us and reading some of the experts and some of the experiences of it. When I was new in Alcoholics Anonymous, God, I hate sitting down in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, so I won't. When I was new in Alcoholics Anonymous and I came to Alcoholics Anonymous on the fourth day of November 1959, and because of the circumstances I was in and because of the condition that I had put my life in, to myself will run riot, I haven't had to have a drink of alcohol or any psychic medication from that moment to this moment, which stretches into almost, it'll be 41 years in November without a drink of alcohol. And I wandered into the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous that day and sit down in a room, and if somebody would ask me of an alcoholic, I'd have probably hit him because I didn't know what an alcoholic was and I had no concept of what it was. And through a set of series of circumstances and good breaks, I was introduced to a program of Alcoholics Anonymous by a bunch of people who were kind and loving and caring, and who gave her their experience, strength, and hope, and shared with me their experience, strength, and hope, and made Alcoholics Anonymous such an attractive package that I would have died and went to hell for a piece of the ribbon that it was wrapped in. And I had no concept about what it was, and I didn't know what Alcoholics Anonymous was, but I knew these people were very strange to me because I didn't know what they were doing. They were taking time out of their busy lives to drive practically all day to spend a couple hours talking to a room full of people who didn't want to listen to them, and who had no idea or concept about anything except maybe smelling perfume or looking the girls over who came on the panels or whatever it was. And somehow I got introduced to this magnificent volume called Alcoholics Anonymous by a guy that I knew that had 23 flat years in the penitentiary, who told me very simply that I didn't have to live that way anymore. And when I asked him about learning how to live, he pointed me to this book, and he said he'd go home and pray that I'd find some part of me in it. And like most alcoholics who go into the book Alcoholics Anonymous with an interior motive to find out that it wouldn't work for me because my case was different anyhow, I discovered the great discovery in our book Alcoholics Anonymous, the very nature of my illness. And I discovered that I was an alcoholic and I suffered from a disease called alcoholism, that all the other nonsensical things that and images that I had built up over my life were meaningless. And in so doing, I discovered what the disease of alcoholism is. And I discovered a lot of things, but I knew a lot about a lot of things. I knew a lot of things about drug addiction because I was a heroin addict for 14 years before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I drank alcohol the way alcohol affects alcoholics. I discovered that drug addiction is not alcoholism. I discovered this all myself by this volume, this book here. I discovered that I was not a young person, you know, that I was a old person in a young body. And I discovered a lot of things, this book, Alcoholics Anonymous. The most important thing I ever read in this book of Alcoholics Anonymous was the doctor's opinion, which describes my illness to me, which makes me different from 9 out of the other 10 people in the world who drink alcohol. It makes me different from people who are just pure drug addicts. Makes me different from people who have eating disorders. It makes me different from people who have gambling disorders, who have all these outside issues that have no relative place in our program of Alcoholics Anonymous, as so was aptly described to us today by these people who read our traditions to us and explained our traditions to us. And when I was new, I worked the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I came out of penitentiary in June 1961, and I was introduced to a man who declared himself my sponsor, who would, for all intents and purposes, and I would go to meetings with him. And I don't know how sober I was, but I would go to meetings, and I was like a lot of people who were new in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd sit in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'd hear this asinine phrase, and it is to me an asinine phrase. Or whether you want to believe it's an asinine phrase or not, it's entirely up to you. And that asinine phrase is this: the tradition are to the group what the steps are to the individual. Well, I don't know about you, but what that did for me was, that's for them. It has nothing to do with me whatsoever. And so I would dance around and do like most of the people do as they get ready to read the traditions. Like most of you know, in Southern California, we read the traditions to calm the crowd down and pass the baskets and, you know, we teach some people how to sing along with the principles before personalities. You know, the only thing, I'd get in the room just in time to sing this. That. And so I'm sitting there one night, and I'm with my sponsor, Norman, and he's talking at that meeting, and I'm dancing around at the coffee break and being cute or whatever I was doing, or hanging out at the coffee pot or whatever, make no difference. But long about the time they said principles before personalities, I slid into my seat and sit there and crossed my arms. I'm ready for what I came for. I'm ready for AA now. Not realizing that I'd missed it, but I'm there for it. You know what I mean? What I'm really in there for, as I've come to understand, I'm there for the entertainment. Those people are going. Now, when all these things fall down, we're going home. And so my sponsor, the kind of man that he was, gave his talk of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we're on our way home that night. And he said to me, how'd you like the meeting, jackass? And I said, fine, Norm, you gave a great talk. He said, you hear the traditions, Johnny? And I said, oh, yeah. He said, what do you know about them? I said, oh, they're to the group what the steps are to the individual. He didn't say, he said, where do you get such silly, asinine ideas anyhow? I said, I just heard that. He says, you told me once upon a time, in one of your weaker moments, that the first person you ever identified with in Alcoholics Anonymous in our book was Bill Wilson, not because of his drinking or his status in life or whatever he was, but because of what he was when he was sober, the four horsemen to the terror they talked about. And I said, yeah. He said, do you know that Bill Wilson wrote the traditions because of a personal weakness within himself and every single one of them? He discovered after the traditions were written that they were a personal weakness within him. And he says, if you're an alcoholic, Johnny, of our type, he says, that personal weakness lies within you. He says, if I was you, he says, because I'm not you, he says, I would go home and I would study our traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I would take the we out of there and put the I in there. He says, because they become a more personal thing, they become more important to you. And what I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous is a very simple thing. I've been sober a long time. And today, as I stand before you, the traditions to me are very much more important than the steps are. And there's a reason for that, you see. If I don't work the steps, I'm going to get drunk. That's no doubt about that whatsoever. But if we don't adhere to these principles, we're all going to be drunk. It's very simple. And never in the history of our fellowship, as I understand it today, has the necessity for the understanding and the application of these magnificent principles applied to our lives as they should be applied today. Never before. In my way of thinking, this gathering here that we've done since 11 o'clock, Pat and his group did such a magnificent job of, this should be the biggest gathering of Alcoholics Anonymous in this desert. Sadly, it's not. And the reason it's not is for the same reason that you hear these things going on. And when I talk about the traditions, it's almost like preaching to the choir, because the only people who want to hear about them are the people who are living by them. I mean, it's the most amazing thing. So, you know, I'm not going to preach to you. I'm going to tell you my experience in Alcoholics Anonymous by the application of these principles in my life. The first one says that my common welfare comes first. My common welfare comes first. My recovery depends upon AA unity. It depends upon it. It's not a supposition. My recovery doesn't depend on me working them damn steps. My recovery depends upon the unity of Alcoholics Anonymous, because if there's no Alcoholics Anonymous, we ain't going to be here. There ain't going to be no Palm Springs Convention. There ain't going to be any Big Book and Bellflower on Monday night. There ain't going to be any Pacific Group. There ain't going to be nothing, because people like me are going to die and sicken and die, much like the Washingtonians did that you heard about earlier. See, what a lot of people don't understand, in the 1940s, our fellowship in its fledging damn near destroyed itself. Not only by the articles or the personal violation of anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film, but there were people down in Florida selling memberships. And somebody said, you can't do that. The guy said, why not? Anything alcoholics get free they don't like. Can't tell me what to do, ain't no rule. Some guy in North Carolina wrote Bill Wilson a letter and told him that Alcoholics Anonymous was in the same state that 100 years before that the Washingtonian group was in. Bill Wilson had never heard of the Washingtonians. That's how extinct they were. And for 100 years after the initial message of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the Washingtonians had the same message we had. Don't ever let anything cloud your memory. But they had the same message that we have. It's the only, we're only the second time in the history of the world that there's ever been this message for the recovering alcoholic. The first one was the Washingtonians. And what is the message? One alcoholic talking to another alcoholic. It's not one alcoholic singing praises to the world. It's one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic to get him to do something that they would not do normally. To put them in a state where they can receive these magnificent gifts that are given to us freely by the people who went before us. The great legacy that you and I have inherited in Alcoholics Anonymous makes it absolutely and totally necessary for me to understand everything and the sacrifices that went before me so I could stand here today, a happy, joyous man who has everything in life that life has to offer him. Everything. And it's only because of the sacrifices of the people who went before me. Do you know that thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of people died so these traditions could come about? That's why we sit here. The sacrifices these magnificent people made who went before us, so I can stand here and talk to you about my experience in this magnificent thing that has saved us from extinction, from saved us from destroying ourselves. What would happen if I only had steps to work? What would I do? I'd just work the steps and go along. Sooner or later, I'd be so engrossed in my magnificence and my steps. You hear it all the time. Well, work, 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 work these steps. I'm working this stuff. I'm doing this work. This book never says a word about working anything. Here are the things we took. We take things here. We do things. We apply things here. So my common welfare comes first. My recovery depends upon the unity of Alcoholics Anonymous, not all this other psychobabble stuff. What are some of the most disruptive things that would destroy the unity of a group? There's one. People who don't know how to put signs up, I suppose. One of the ladies, I forgot which one it was, read something here that I really adhere to and have come to understand is one of the great destructive things of any group of Alcoholics Anonymous in the world. Probably the most destructive thing that can happen to you and I in our groups is gossip. The gossip. You know, the little backbiting gossiping, you know. We call it constructive criticism to one another, but it basically is a deadly, deadly, deadly thing, gossiping. You know, we've had experiences in our group where that has almost destroyed our group, but luckily the gossips quit having people to gossip so they don't go. They go gossip to each other, I guess, because gossip can only be carried from one person to another. If it stops, it stops, but it's a disruptive thing. No one individual has a right to disrupt the unity of a group. No person. I'm talking at a meeting about a year ago out in the valley. And I'm sitting in the meeting, and it's not my group. I'm just there as a guest speaker. And some young kid, 1 year sober, got up and took a birthday cake and said he was an addict. Sit down. Not my group, not my place to go up and tell them they're violating the tradition by letting non-alcoholics participate in their meeting. But I'm up there to talk, and there was some lady sitting over there about where that young lady's sitting, two or three rows back, and she was obviously drinking. I mean, I know that's kind of odd to think that people drink in Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. We've got some people who think that we're not supposed to have these people in here. You know, God damn them, take them to the treatment center, then bring them back when they're wonderful, and they can sit with us in a fine place. But this lady's, you know, kind of disrupting. And I stopped and said, you want to talk, baby? Come on up here. I said, I'll listen to you. You know, smiled. And, no, she said, she quieted down. And about 5 minutes later, she's up in arms again over there. You know how people are to drink. They make a little noise. I mean, I know all you sophisticated people in Palm Springs. They your cocktails and went home and were quiet and happy. But some of these people out in the valley are really, whew, But what really got me is some guy, I don't know who he was, some self-appointed deal, he walked over to her and said, "Hey, get out of here. You're disrupting the meeting." I said, "Wait a minute. Wait a minute. If she leaves, I leave." And I said, "By matter of fact, it's a sorry damn state of affairs in this group. Will you allow an addict to take a baked birthday cake, but you want to throw an alcoholic out of here?" Boy, they got real quiet. Because I brought it to their attention what our primary purpose is here. After the meeting, the secretary sauntered up to me with some type of a half-cornered apology. As a matter of fact, they haven't asked me back at that group yet either. I could care less, to tell the truth. He said, "Well, you know, she was annoying the meeting." And I said, "So was that woman with that squalling kid back there, but you didn't ask her to leave." So where do we draw the line? What do we call disruptive? What do we call breaking up the unity of our group? Is it somebody we allow to disturb our meeting with their inconsideration? They're little things. I've talked in meetings where people had kids playing in front of the things, and you're not, you know, I tell them, "Why don't you take them out and let them play on the freeway, for Christ's sake," or something like that. Just, I mean, I don't know, I'm kind and generous from time to time. But all these things are disruptive. All these things are disruptive. They destroy their unity. But why in the world should we sit in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and think that disruptiveness, talking to your fellow man or getting up and wandering around getting a cup of coffee or, you know, discovering at the last minute when they hit the thing that it's time to go to the bathroom or whatever, why should all these people, why would they do to disrupt the unity of the group? Very simply this: somebody sitting in that room needs to hear. Nobody knows who it is. I don't. I don't know who needs to hear here. I don't know who needs to hear when Pat and his gang were doing this. I don't have a clue who's supposed to hear here. But as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous whose unity depends upon this thing, it behooves me to keep the unity where I live quiet enough where I don't disturb the guy sitting next to you who he might want to hear. That's all it says here. It's an amazing thing. These things are written, the tradition are written, so they're not too hard. It says, "For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They don't govern. I don't govern nothing. You want to know how my group treats me? I started the group 28 years ago. I started that meeting. I was a secretary and the speaker getter and everything. And slowly but surely, they whittled me down to the assistant chairman. That means I get to help the chairman put the chairs away on Monday night. And he's some guy I sponsored. 15 minutes of his life, he's in charge. And then..." Well, what is the authority in Alcoholics Anonymous? Anyhow, what would be the authority? It's a loving God. He's expressed himself through our group conscience. But what is our group conscience? Group conscience is informed. A lot of groups, when they get ready to have elections, will bring in a lot of people from outside the group, and they want to elect. And a lot of groups have loaded up meetings to get certain outside issues or certain things voted into groups and take them over. And I'll tell you how I know the ultimate authority in Alcoholics Anonymous is, because I belong to a group on Monday night. I'm a member there and have been for a long time. And that group, people sit down and pay attention to what goes on. We have a thing in there that only alcoholics actually participate in our meetings. We have the whole thing. We have our election, have our secretary. The group has an open election for secretaries, and we have hidden ballots, and we do everything according to the book, so there's no personalities involved in the situation. But it's been my experience to be able to go around meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous where these things are not, the group's unity and the group's integrity doesn't seem to mean much to people. We got people wandering all around. We got non-alcoholics participating at their podiums and taking birthday cakes and doing all this nonsensical thing. And pretty soon, if you go back to these groups over a period of years, and I have the experience of doing that to some of these groups over a period of years, I watch them slowly but surely dwindle away to nothingness and become just an empty room with nothing in there. And there's all various excuses they have. People say, "Well, we can't smoke in here anymore, so the smokers can't come." And it's not valid excuses to me, because I belong to the largest group in my area, and I go on Wednesday night to the largest group of Alcoholics Anonymous in the world, and there's standing room only there, and we can't smoke there either, so there's no valid excuse for that whatsoever. What I'm trying to tell you is that if the ultimate authority becomes the people in the group, and the people in the group who are the ultimate authority have no principles whatsoever, and have become this unknowledgeable stuff about these traditions that we have heard about so far about, where we can just see what happened to us, happened to the Washingtonians in 1840, if we don't adhere to what our dear Dr. Bob said to us in the Gettysburg Address of Alcoholics Anonymous, let's not mess it up with a lot of Freudian intellectual nonsense. It has no use to anything but the human mind. Our program dwindled down into its simplest form is love and service. I won't love anything I can't serve. I won't serve anything I don't love. I'm not here to panacea the world. I'm here to stay sober a day at a time and carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. And the only way I can do that is to have some working knowledge. The tradition that's most under attack more than anything else in our group from these people who are unprincipled, who know nothing about this disease whatsoever, who want to stand up and take credit for knowing about it but don't, is this third one. My requirement for membership is my willingness to have my alcoholism related, not to stop drinking. Most people come to Alcoholics Anonymous have already stopped. Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't stop anybody from drinking. Desire to stop drinking? You can ride that back all you want to. But how much harm do we do people with our little heads up our rear end, fanny, holier-than-thou attitudes around here, to think that this is a panacea for everybody? Would that make us arrogant or something? No. Our survival depends upon it. Survival. I went to an NA meeting not very long ago. This is an outside issue, but being that it's not an AA gathering, I guess I can say it. And I didn't understand anything that was going on in that meeting. They asked me to talk, but they wouldn't let me identify as an alcoholic, so I didn't participate. Do you know that you can't go to Narcotics Anonymous and identify as an alcoholic? But we have these psalm-singing sisters hanging around Alcoholics Anonymous who think it's perfectly all right to let anybody come in and identify with any damn thing they want to identify with. We don't do those people any harm. We do not do anybody any goodness by allowing them to think they belong in Alcoholics Anonymous if they're not an alcoholic. This concept that it's all one big illness, you know where that came from? Treatment center only had one van. I know that's the way it is. And there's a lot more money involved in it. The requirement was read here in the long form of the traditions, and this is what people ought to read. Our membership ought to include all who suffer from alcoholism. Period. Hence may we refuse none who wish to recover from alcoholism. In our little 12 and 12 workshop on Thursday night, a couple weeks ago, there was a guy talking about this very tradition. And he was going on and on and on about not drinking. This is all about not drinking. This is all about not drinking. This is all about not drinking. It's a desire to stop drinking. It's about not drinking. It's about not drinking. He went on and on and on for 20 minutes. And at the question and answer period, the guy asked him, took up his hand. And he said to him, this is about not drinking membership? The guy said, yeah. He said, then how come they won't let me take a chip if I'm using heroin? You know the guy who was so adamant about not drinking couldn't answer him? We were having him talk on our tradition. He wasn't a bad guy. But he couldn't answer that. To be sober is to be sober is to be sober. How are you going to experience the great privilege of sobriety if you aren't sober? And if you're taking anything and moves you from the neck up, you ain't sober. I mean, why? I mean, why would you need to work steps or the traditions if you can take a pill? Why would you need to overcome depression by getting out of yourself and helping somebody else if you can take a pill? Oh, desire to stop drinking. God, God, you can ride that to the Doomsday Express in some of these gatherings. I could. But when I came in, if they'd asked me if I had a desire to stop drinking, I'd have told them no. No desire to stop drinking, for Christ's sake. I can't imagine out life in the world without something. And so, you know, my requirement for membership in Alcoholics Anonymous, for my own membership, because I suffer from alcoholism. That's my membership requirement. I suffer from alcoholism. That's my requirement for membership. And what's yours is? It says each group ought to be autonomous. I ought to be autonomous. Except in mattering groups as a whole. Other groups are A's. What does that mean? Why should I be autonomous? Because I'm self-governing. How would I affect other groups as a whole? Very simple. Not practice these steps or these traditions in your meeting by allowing one of these meetings where anything goes. That accepts A as a whole. How do you do that? What do you do about it? We haven't got any place run around and knocks on the door and say you violated 12 traditions, we're taking you off to jail tomorrow. We don't have any place like that. What is our big punishment for a group who violates your tradition? What is the death sentence? Take their name out of the directory. Ooh, that's serious stuff. Why would we want to do that? Why would I want to? Why would I stand still and want to take a group like that out of the directory? Well, I don't know how you feel about it, but I never forgot how it was to be a newcomer in Alcoholics Anonymous. I never have forgot my first meeting and what I thought. And in every gathering I ever go to, there's newcomers there. And the ones I like to think about, I like to think about the people whose insurance policies have run out, who've got no money for these dried out upholstered places that they go to, who teach them all this psychobabble that has no earthly use to anything at all, particularly about our disease, whose only purpose is to get these people physically sober so we can help them get into the solution, let them deal with the problems there. In every gathering I've ever been to, I know there's an alcoholic who's been through all these things, who's run out of areas of excuses or places to go or can't go no more. I know they wander into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous somewhere. I know they do it all over the world. And that alcoholic life hangs on a very simple thread, that if he doesn't hear about the solution to his problem, he's going to wander off in that world and die a horrible, horrible death. So my group is autonomous, but we must always remember that our primary purpose, which is the next tradition, is to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. That's my primary purpose. I'm not the panacea to all people. I haven't got all things to all people. You know, one of the ladies read it here, out of the 12 and 12, better to do one thing well than three or four things poorly. You know, if I combined all my effort and my avenues of experience into Alcoholics Anonymous, I can be much more effective here carrying the message than I can if I try to go to all these other outside things and try to be a part of them. And you know, you almost get the idea sometimes that they've got a program for busted toenails somewhere, for Christ's sake. We don't need to hear about busted toenails in AA. That's what the autonomy is about. That's what the fifth tradition, the singleness of purpose, it all wanders down to the singleness of purpose. I only have one purpose in life, that's to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. I'm not interested in Al-Anon. I'm not interested in the Kiwanis Club either. Well, to me, they're as much a part of AA as Al-Anon is, or Alateen is, or Al-A-Dog is. They have their own 12 steps, their own program of recovery. This is Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not saying they're not important, and I'm not saying that they don't do a lot of good. I'm particularly not interested in them. Why should I go over there and take time away from this magnificent thing that gave me life and gave me things and go over there and work somewhere where I don't identify? What is Alcoholics Anonymous about anyhow? It's one alcoholic relating to another alcoholic. If you've got problems, if you're an alcoholic, you've got the same problems basically that I do. The difference between my problem and their problems is my life is hanging on the line here. If I don't find some recovery here, and if I don't find some solution to this thing here, I'm going to die drunk. Or I'm going to blow my brains out there. It's not an emotional imbalance. I think everybody has the same set of emotions, for Christ's sake. It's just that alcohol does something for me that nothing else seemed to do for other people. That's why I'm an Alcoholics Anonymous, to find a way to live where my emotions don't get so out of balance that I have to drink. It's this amazing thing. Out of AA, or me, I should never endorse or lend my name to any outside facility as an AA member. That's what it says here. It leaves problems of money, property, and prestige to divert me from my primary purpose. You know what the most deadly word there is? Prestige. My prestige. My prestige. Oh, yeah. I'm a sober alcoholic, you know. I'm a sober alcoholic. Well, I didn't break my anonymity because I didn't say I was a sober member of AA. The hell I didn't. The hell I didn't. For me to sit around and take any type of credit at all for the great blessings that have been given to me, this young lady read it here, is a total violation of everything we talked about here. Total violation. What, I had something to do with my recovery? I had something to do with these great blessings that have been brought on me? I wandered into AA and my prestige now. Look what I have done. Look what I have accomplished here. I have stayed sober. I can't stay sober, for Christ's sake. If I could stay sober, what would I be doing in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting? If I could stay sober. I couldn't do it before I saw you people on that fateful day in November 1959, and I won't be able to do it if I don't keep my singleness of purpose anchored in here, trying to help the people who helped me. It's amazing to me how people want to do all these other things, stand up and thank everything in the world but the thing that gave them life. Not me. Sorry. I'm going to go down with the ship if it goes down. Because I'm an alcoholic. I don't have another chance. This is the only... My sponsor told me the other day. We talked to him about it. This is the only answer for Alcoholics Anonymous on a permanent basis in 7,000 years of recorded history. Our disease stretches back 7,000 years of people have been quashing them grapes and acting goofy. Do you know the guy that had the ark took some grapes with him? The minute the ark hit land, he got drunk and started frolicking. Danger's over with. There's another thing for alcoholic. Danger's over with. Time to party. It's every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. My sponsor told me that. You know how he told me that? He said, I should go to work. He said, you're a bum. I said, no, I'm not. He said, what are you? So I'm an AA member. He said, no, you're an AA bum. Bums don't work. He said, get off of welfare. I told him I'd never been on welfare. He said, what do you call living in penitentiary? Self-supporting through your own contributions? I went to work. I had to go to work. I've been working ever since. So I stole my first paycheck. And I found out what it's like for a thief to be stolen from. That's not fun either, I'll tell you that. I'll tell you another one that I have some great experience with is that I should remain a non-professional. I should remain non-professional. My service centers may hire special workers, but I got to remain a non-professional. Alcoholics Anonymous was given me for free and for fun by people at their own expense came to me with it, and so I got to do it too. When I was new in Alcoholics Anonymous, they were starting up a bunch of programs and things, and all these things that are going on now weren't going on then, but whether that's good or bad, I don't know, but I didn't work too well. I had this job out in the oil fields. I wasn't working very well, and I got a call from the warden of the penitentiary I came out of. I was about a year and a half or 2 years out of that place. And he said, Johnny, he said, I recommended you to go talk on a panel on the role of the offender in treatment at a place they're getting ready to start up. It's called Norco. It's going to be a penitentiary for people with heavy drug problems. And I made an appointment for you to go out there and talk on that panel. I said, well, thank you, Mr. Lloyd. And so I went out there, and essentially what they did, they offered me a job. It wasn't counseling, sort of. It was a liaison officer between the parole department and the parolee. And what I was supposed to do was I was supposed to take these people to AA meetings and see how they responded to them. And I guess they were going to give me a little desk with a plaque on it so I could see who I was. And they were going to give me a car, a decent car, didn't have much of that. And God, it really sounded well. It was going to give me $1,000 a month. 1962, $1,000 a month was a lot of money in a state car. I mean, a state car, I could have a little sign on it. See, I was from the state and all this kind of stuff. Really, something good. And there were people there from Synanon, and there were people there from NA, which were just getting out of the gates at that time. And it sounded real good to me. The thing that saved my life was they ended the session that day, and I had to go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous that night. And I had to ride down with this old lady who had carried the message to me when I was in the penitentiary, who didn't drive, and I had an old rattletrap car and it barely run, and I just barely got my driver's license back. And we never knew if we were going to make it or not, but I picked her up and I got her in the car and we're going down there, and I said, "You know what, Mama, it won't be long now." "To what?" And I said, "Well, we're going to have a nice car. And I'm only going to work. I'm not going to work these shifty jobs in the oil fields no more and get dirty. I'm going to be able to sit in a little office and have a clean shirt and tie on, have money, and we're going to be able to go to these places at night. And man, we're going to do all this kind of stuff. I'm going to be able to drive you around." She said, "What are you going to do, sweetheart?" And I told her about this liaison job. And she thought it for a while, and she said to me, "I'd like to ask you a question." I said, "What do you want to know?" She says, "How do you sell a gift, particularly if the gift isn't yours?" And I had to go back the next day and decline these people's opposition. And I told them very simply that as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'd be glad to come out and talk at their group anytime they wanted me to. But I would do it after I got off of work, because I have to work and become self-supporting through my own contribution, and I can't take money for talking about the thing that has saved my life and was given me for free and for fun. You know, that's been 38 years now, and I have never regretted that decision, ever, because I find out that it's much more important for me to carry the message as a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous when they can't figure out what I get out of it. Because I remember my questions when I was new. When I sat in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, these people drove up those old back roads all day and sat in them meetings in that old Quonset hut of a building in those early 8 days. I remember my questions. I wonder what they get out of this. I wonder what they get out. Thank God one of my therapists didn't show up on one of them panels. Thank God one of the counselors or my probation officers didn't show up on one of those panels. Because I'd have thought it was just another nickel and dime scheme, and I'd have got up and walked out of the room and you'd have another talker here today. But when I got to figure out what it was that these people were doing, and I got a hold of this thing through the application of these steps in my life and found out that we do this thing for free and for fun, and that there's a way of life here, that the great reward of all Alcoholics Anonymous to me is not being sober and not the good life, but is watching people recover here from this seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. You can't buy that. You can't pay for it. And the people who get engaged in that type of nonsensical behavior usually end up on the outside looking on the inside. It's the most debilitating thing, because I've known people who've done this. And they're all in good intentions. I had good intentions when I was going to take that job. Man, I could do things. But thank God there was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous who took me back out of my own wonderfulness and put me back into the center of things. Everybody wants, "God, man, look what I can do." How many alcoholics are you got to remember? How many alcoholics? Who knows how many alcoholics you can help? But you're not going to. You're going to end up, if you're going to do that, remember what this lady read. Remember this. Whoever pays the piper calls the tune. And no matter how well your intentions are, you're going to have to sacrifice whatever principles you have if you work in the field of alcoholism to stay sober. You're going to have to sacrifice these principles. And sooner or later, the people that I've known have either had to get out of it or they perish in it. And that's just my experience of watching this thing go on. It's God's gift to us here. It's for free and for fun. And we must do this. That's why this thing is important to me. AA is such, I'd never be organized. Well, we don't have to worry about this convention violating that committee or anything, I'll tell you that. This thing is over-organized, for Christ's sake. They got things running on top of one another. Somebody said, "Why do you think they're doing that?" I said, "Well, maybe they got to get it all in one day so they don't have to go again for another year." For Christ's sake, I don't know why they want to do it, but I don't judge. What does that mean to me? See, I work, you know, I work out there in the world. I know about organization. I know about it all of that. You know, I mean, there's always a CEO, president, and goes down to vice presidents and secretary, treasurers. They got little triangle things there. You know, they do that like a little deal, and they branch off and they hang that. What makes Alcoholics Anonymous unique is that we've got an upside-down thing here. The head, or the people who think they're the head, are at the bottom. Who is the head of Alcoholics Anonymous? You are. You are. The individual is what counts here. Organizations, and I know a lot of people in New York think they are, but they don't have my vote. Well, that makes a difference. Basically, they're a letter operating outfit, but I don't want to get into that either, so I'll leave that sit. We have a singleness of purpose in Alcoholics Anonymous, and one of the singleness of purpose, one of the concepts they're doing over the next room, is that every single individual can be heard in AA. Nobody here is so discredited that they don't have a voice in the product of Alcoholics Anonymous. Nobody. So anybody, the single individuals, inverted people think this is crazy when you tell them. How can you run an organization like that where nobody runs nothing? We don't know. That's what you tell them. I don't know. It works. It's worked for 65 years, for Christ's sake. People are doing well here. Well, who runs things? Nobody? What, New York? Oh, they don't have any opinion on nothing over there. Well, who runs things? I don't know. Maybe the coffee maker. Well, I tell you, I get in a lot of trouble sometimes because of my views on things. I was at a gathering in Minnesota a few years. Matter of fact, I haven't been back there since then either. I was at this gathering in Minnesota. It was called something. I don't know what it was. A big turtle roundup or something. I don't know. And I'm up there, and I'm a Saturday night speaker, and they had a bad habit that weekend. It was a bad habit to me. Every time they had started a meeting, they stood the delegates and the ex-trustees and the ex-delegates and the ex-trustees and this one and that, and they introduced all these people and give them a 5 or 10 minute thing before every meeting. And this went on Friday night when I was there. It went on Saturday afternoon, and Saturday night I'm up to talk, and one of my very dear friends was a trustee at large, and, you know, he got a ovation, and they're doing this again. And then they asked me to talk, and I said, I don't know if there's any new people in Alcoholics Anonymous tonight, and you know how they are. Yeah. I said, well, stand up and stand there. Then I said, are there any coffee makers from the groups in AA? 3 or 4 of them guys stood up, and I said, now I want you people to look at these people, because these are the most important people in Alcoholics Anonymous. You can get along without speakers. You can get along without DCMs and all these other people, but you show up at a meeting when there ain't no coffee and see what happens. See, that's what I mean about all this nonsense. See, I mean, guy that gets there early makes the coffee. He's important, really important. Opens the door, sets up the meeting, makes the coffee. Not the person who gets the speakers, not the speaker, not the people who do it. The guy that makes the coffee. Those are the guys who make the deal go here. The guys that sweep up. We're damn near done. Yeah, I can see that. The guy that sweeps up the floor and keeps the place going, so makes it in a nice room so the people who own the place don't throw us out because we're a bunch of pigs. These are the go-getters in Alcoholics.